Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. Recently, someone forwarded me this paper, and I'm glad they sent it to me because this is something I would have otherwise missed. And I thought it did a really good job synthesizing a few key points that we need to keep in mind when we talk about a very common medication. And most of these are things that we probably know, but we just haven't put together in one solid statement. And this is a paper that comes from the Intensive Care Medicine Journal, and this is from January 14, 2019, so a very recent paper titled 10 Myths About Furosemide. Now, we know it, of course, as furosemide in the United States, also known commonly as Lasix. And this is a very common loop diuretic. And we see this medicine all the time. We use it all the time. But there are definitely some myths that come up, and there are things that we may not fully appreciate or understand that it's worth talking about. And so we're going to cover these 10 myths. And it was already a very short paper. It's one that definitely read if you get the chance. And I've linked it into the show notes. But I want to add a few comments as well as make sure to include some of the key links to articles that support the points that are brought up into it. So make sure to check the show notes to get a little more information. Otherwise, let's just dive into this. So let's talk about the first myth. And this is one that it seems like people misunderstand quite frequently. And that is that furosemide causes AKI or acute kidney injury. Now, inappropriate use of diuretics in hypovolemic patients can contribute to the development of AKI, but when it's used appropriately with fluid overload, it can actually help resolve the patient's AKI. And this is based on multiple bodies of evidence where diuretics can be used to prevent tubular obstruction, reduce medullary oxygen consumption, and increase renal blood flow, as well as reduce fluid overload and venous congestion. The next common myth is that furosemide and fluids together can prevent AKI in high-risk patients. This is pretty commonly believed that when you do this combination, you'll avoid the hypovolemia and thus the AKI, which kind of ties into the first myth, but it's not actually been demonstrated in any real evidence. And so fluids should be used for intravascular hypovolemia and diuretics should be used for intravascular hypervolemia, not the combination thereof like we want to go straight to. All right. And this ties in again with the last couple of myths. The third myth, furosemide is contraindicated in AKI. Okay. So if it causes it, you know, contraindication, that all ties in together. At least that's what some people will think. But this is also a myth. This medication plays several roles. It may require even higher doses in severe AKI. Not that we shouldn't be using it at all, not that it causes it. It actually can really help with AKI, especially in severe cases. It also plays a role in managing hyperkalemia, and it can be used to stress test tubular function and help with the risk of progression to higher stages of AKI. So again, this is a medication we want to use in AKI. It's not contraindicated and it does not cause AKI. All right. So if you think, well, then you can use it, then that means it's going to kickstart function. Well, that's the fourth myth. While furosemide can lead to significant diuresis, this reflects the functioning of the tubular cells and not the drug's effect on renal function. So in patients not responsive to diuretics with fluid overload, we shouldn't be giving repeat doses thinking that, man, this is going to suddenly work for us. No, if the tubular cells aren't functioning appropriately, then furosemide is not going to help us in this case, and it's not going to, quote unquote, kickstart kidney function. So quit using it for that purpose. Moving right along to myth number five. So furosemide works better if given together with albumin. Okay, so this one's a little more tricky than the others that we've talked about so far. The evidence is sparse, but furosemide is highly protein-bound, and with severely low levels of albumin, this could impair secretion of this medication into the tubular lumen. So a meta-analysis did find better fluid balance with co-administration in those with a low albumin, but some evidence is less convincing, especially in those with normal albumin levels. So basically, yes, if they have a low albumin, go ahead and treat for that. If they have a normal albumin, the furosemide isn't going to work better just because you give albumin with it. Our sixth point. Okay, so while sustained diuresis is easier to achieve when you do a continuous infusion, it's not necessarily making it appear to have better outcomes, at least patient-oriented outcomes. So it's not something that you can't do or shouldn't do. It's just simply that the furosemide infusion is not going to be more effective. It may just be a little bit easier to actually achieve your endpoint, at least logistically, we'll say. Okay, so point number 7, furosemide can prevent renal replacement therapy, or RRT. This, again, kind of ties in with all these other myths, and so it's easy to kind of see where this may come into play and where people may think this. But a systematic review and meta-analysis did demonstrate that loop diuretics such as furosemide were associated with a shorter duration of RRT and increased urine output, but it did not improve the things we really care about, such as mortality and the rate of independence from RRT. There was a relatively recent study called the SPARK study, and it did demonstrate that it does not help patients with early AKI needing RRT or having further worsening of their AKI. So it may not, but it really seems like it's not going to be something that's going to prevent it. It just may make it a little bit shorter. All right, tying in with our last few points here. So number 8. This myth is, again, another one that ties in specifically with renal replacement therapy, and that's that furosemide can help wean anuric patients from RRT. No, really, it doesn't work that way, and especially we have to be careful with these high doses of furosemide for various reasons. One is that furosemide, especially in high doses, can be ototoxic, and if you have an anuric patient with increased risk of furosemide accumulation as a result, if the diuretics aren't helping and do not appear to be effective in improving creatinine clearance or inducing renal recovery, we really should be very careful with this and not use this as a means to wean anuric patients from renal replacement therapy. Going into myth number 9, furosemide-induced diuresis after AKI implies full renal recovery. Okay, this one can drive me nuts a little bit because you have other things going on with this. There are so many different factors. Furosemide can lead to increased urinary output in AKI, but this is not a sign of full or permanent recovery, as there remains an increased risk of chronic kidney disease and increased mortality, even if things look like they're doing better or maybe back to baseline. So do not be fooled that because your Lasix diuresis was helpful with the AKI means that they're going to go back to complete recovery. Nope, that's again, an easy misnomer and part of the dogma that we need to take care of here. Finally, point number 10. And to be honest, of all of these, this was the one that I found the most beneficial. I learned the most from and took away the most from it because I don't know why I didn't think of this. But when they spelled it out, it it made total sense. And that is that furosemide should be stopped if serum creatinine is increasing, indicating worsening renal function. This dogma is one that I hear all the time, so I didn't think anything else about it until I actually did a little of the deep dive on this and noticed the trials that they're talking about, the information they're talking about, and how this works. That this is straightforward. Okay, so let's go through this. Creatinine is measured as a concentration in serum, okay? So an isolated increase in combination with a rise of hematocrit can actually be a sign of reduction of intravascular volume and effective decongestion. So let's think about this for a second. Let's go back over those details again. Creatinine is a concentration in serum. Part of the reason why creatinine is not that great and why we need to use other functions instead, like eGFR, but for this, when we're talking about a lot of times with kidney injuries, people are going to base it off creatinine. That's kind of the historic measure. So if creatinine is based on a serum concentration, and you notice at the same time that that's going up as the hematocrit is going up with these patients as you're diuresing them with furosemide, that's appropriate because the intravascular volume is decreasing. So yeah, it's going to become a little more concentrated there. So no, this is actually a good thing. This helps us show that this really is the case, effective decongestion. So we shouldn't stop because of the rise of creatinine. Again, assuming that it's isolated and is going up appropriately. Now, the FACT trial further supported this claim where RRT was lower in the group with increased serum creatinine than with diuretic dosing. And apparently in some literature beyond this, and I can include show notes if people really want it, but you can go to the original paper and it details this as well. It links in a few other things. But this is incredible because this is something that's pretty well known in certain groups. But like I said, if you talk to me about it in the emergency department side or in the early stages of critical care management for these patients, I would see this bump in creatinine and would think something bad. Now I know I need to look at it a little more in depth before I say if this is a good or a bad thing. So this is something to take away. I think these are all points of dogma that we need to remember and keep at the back of our minds. And so I really enjoyed this paper for that reason. If you have some more of these types of papers or information in general you want me to go over to include in podcasts, please let me know, because this is sometimes how I get ideas for podcasts. And with this particular one, I really enjoyed it because it was a quick paper that's easy to review and easy to turn around and make sure that other people are learning this too. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.